Good day, everybody. Welcome to Wessex Ways podcast episode 19. That's 019. I am Paul Whitewick. Who the hell are you, person I'm staring at?
Oh, that's a great intro, Paul. I am Headley. You all know that. Let's roll the music.
Hey!
Episode 19. We've made it through this far.
This is pretty good, incredible. Isn't it? This is good.
Yeah.
Who are you, Headley? Anyway, what do you do as a brief summary into
a brief summary? I'm a morbidly obese middle-aged man who stands in a field flying a toy helicopter in a vain attempt to take pictures that people may want to buy one day of ancient sites in the countryside. And who are you, Paul?
I mean, I could almost just use that exact sentence you used and just, like, I hold a film camera.
Take the obese out of it. Not obese.
I could edit that cleverly, Headley, and just, like, go voiceover or something on a bit. Anyway, I make YouTube videos, Headley.
You do make YouTube videos. A lot of people know that.
On similar subjects.
Yeah, so Wessex Ways, for anyone who's new, and we did have a lot of new people last time, so thank you for anyone who dares to remain. So we talk about things in Wessex being the former kingdom in the southwest of England. So you talk about generally things that used to move, like disused canals, trains, Roman roads, etc. And I tend to talk about hills, paths, and places what you can walk and cycle.
Small confession to make, Headley, before we start. Small confession.
Yeah.
I have ordered, because I'm exceptionally lazy and upstairs in our bedroom, a drink. So in a second, we may be disturbed by the lovely Rebecca. That's confession number one.
The lovely Rebecca to disturb.
The lovely Rebecca may disturb us in a minute. So we apologise in advance to our listeners. Confession number two, before we delve headlong into things, I watched a YouTube video the other day.
Right.
As you do. By a man called David Staveley. Have you heard of David Staveley?
I haven't.
No, had I. Kind of. I don't think I had anyway. David Staveley found a Roman road 10 miles from my house that I didn't know about.
Really?
I feel like a local
Roman road escaped the notice of the Paul Whitewick.
Yeah, I feel so many emotions right now, Headley.
I just feel a bit let down.
Yeah, and I'm with you. Yeah. I feel like I've let everybody down.
But you can't really make a video about that because that's hanging out your, incompetence in public, isn't it?
Yeah, to 93,128 people.
Not that you keep count. Yes.
Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Oh dear.
Two confessions. Have you got any confessions to make, Headley?
I haven't got any confessions. I'm
that's good.
Whiter than white. I'm absolutely, angelic. what I do want to do, actually, is I want to give a shout out to a YouTube channel as well. So we have mentioned previously WC21. Never found out what that actually stands for, but luckily we're going to meet him tomorrow, and aren't we? And fingers crossed he will be our guest on the next episode, so we can ask him whether WC means water closet, whether he's actually called Mr. WC21, or whether he's got a normal name and such and such. So it'd be interesting. But the person I want to give a shout out to, who may be listening to this, is again, I'm not going to give his real name, but his YouTube channel is Tweedy Outdoors. He's also got one called, is it Tweedy Pubs? I think it is.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
Where he goes around London, remaining very composed, going reviewing pubs. But the difference is, so Tweedy Outdoors, it's one of these YouTube channels that I've got myself into like a rabbit hole and start binge watching the episodes. He goes around, you know, the places we love, so historic sites, stone circles, hill forts, etc., etc. And he generally rough camps overnight as well. So nothing big so far. It's a bloke who walks through the countryside, camps overnight, you know, goes to the solstice at Avebury and that sort of thing. Gives us a bit of a tour of the Wessex countryside and other places. But the difference is he does all of that wearing a fine quality, what looks like Harris tweed suit, head to toe, fine brogue shoes, taking with him fine wine and fine dining, and then consumes all of that in a hedge somewhere. It's strangely addictive.
The rough camping's crazy, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. I mean, if I went rough camping, I would get outdoor gear. You know, I'd get goodness knows what. I'd get all the gear to keep me warm and dry, yeah. And I'd probably take a Cornish pasty. Well, this fella's the other way around. He takes basically goes in a tweed suit and has a sort of a, you know, fine accoutrement, very, very well dressed, a bit like WC21 actually, and then sits in a hedge drinking wine that you and I probably couldn't afford, and scallops and goodness knows what. So it's strangely addictive. Strangely, yeah, I didn't want to like a new YouTube channel because I've been down that rabbit hole so many times. Oh. But yeah, this needs to be added to the list. So yeah, well, Tweedy Outdoors.
Excellent. Whilst you're there, I'll mention one briefly as well. Who I've been chatting to very briefly, Cambrian Chronicles.
Oh.
Found a couple of his videos recently, hugely interesting. He's a historian. You don't necessarily see his face, but it's Welsh based, but it's not really, because he does all sorts of weird and wonderful sort of very in-depth deep dives into just some really curious subjects you've never heard of, from the origin of the Welsh flag to a random forgotten tribe of the British Isles or whatever. But just really fascinating videos, really interesting. He's only had like maybe 40 videos on this channel, but he's got 90,000 subscribers. You know, his videos are getting sort of 4,000 or 5,000 views per video.
Wow.
And they're really well researched, like ridiculously. Mm. He's a historian, so he really knows how to research and how to get the info. So fascinating little channel. Big shout out to Cambrian Chronicles.
Cambrian Chronicles. Yeah. So we like these sort of antiquarian and historian YouTube channels, and anyone who gets outside and sees these places, you know, it can get they can get quite addictive, I find.
I love telling a story, and I kind of think that if I see a channel that does that back at me and it grips me, then it's kind of what I want to see. I guess I kind of try and make what I want to see. So
yeah,
it fits.
Yeah, brilliant. Right, I'm going to have to blow my nose. Sorry. I can tell you what I've been up to and you can tell me what you've been up to, but there's a reason I'm blowing my nose at the moment. I'll start. So the last few weeks since the last podcast, which was with Sam Walks a Lot, I basically just got back from Tenerife. So went out there in the process of kind of starting to sell my mum's property out there. Lovely property, overlooks the sea with palm trees and all of that. But since we lost Dad, it's no longer tenable, really. Mum's not in the greatest of health. So going out there is not going to be a frequent thing. So really, we need to sell it. So I came, it was 30 degrees when I was on the rocks there. And then when the plane landed, it was -2 in the UK. Oh. And my body's just gone backwards ever since, to be perfectly honest with you. I did a little trip over to Seven Barrows near Lambourne. So this is a field with 9 barrows in it, strangely, and a few in the field opposite. So I don't know where the word 7 came from in the name, but it was a lovely day. So I travelled over there to get some aerial shots. I did a walk in the Chilterns with Sam Walks a Lot. So that was the day after the previous podcast. Really, really nice walk. Really, really great day. And we walked from Swincombe up on the western side of the Chilterns over the top down to the ruins of St. James's Church on the other side, where we both put our drones up, took pictures and video. And someone on someone on Facebook just put a comment on my picture just said AI. So thanks for that. I think it was meant as an insult, but I'll take it as a compliment if it looks good enough to be AI. So thank you for that, whoever said that.
Essentially, they thought you'd just asked.
It was... Yeah, exactly. I'd just asked some AI system to draw me a picture of ruins in a forest in the hills. Now, and so St. James's is in this beautiful valley. And I think that it's probably one of the pictures that I've edited the least. It's one of those things where just the raw file out of the camera is not a million miles away from what you're aiming for anyway, you know, dramatics, guys. So, okay, so not only maybe it looked a bit AI, it wasn't due to any editing, it just the way it was. Mm. Went to Whittenham Clumps, walked along the Thames, done a few trips up the Ridgeway along Streatley Warren. Again, Uffington, Whitehorse Hill, Wayland Smithy, all the kind of usual things. Lowbury Hill, I had a problem with. I went up there and the top was closed. And I was like, okay, my favourite hill's closed off. Couldn't get to the top. And there's a sign up and everything saying, you know, private and all that. So I was a bit disappointed, but I think there's a small chance it might be my fault. So what happened was I've been posting pictures of the Roman building at the top of Lowbury Hill in different lights and talking about what untold treasures there are under the ground. Mm-hmm. And it seems I'm wondering if maybe that sparked a few people who follow me with metal detectors and shovels to go up there, and maybe Historic England stepped in. But the guy who looks after the scheduled monuments is called Dan Bashford from Historic England. I'm meeting him in January. We're working on a project with Anna Dillon about Grimm's Ditch and such like. So maybe I'll get something out of him then. So yeah, I'm not sure whether that's my fault or not. I'm kind of hoping it's not. Okay, why have I put that there? My notes are in the wrong order. So that's it, really. Oh no, there was one other thing. I started the Facebook group called UK Hill Force. And it kind of grew really quickly. I was a bit, you know, it took me by surprise. We've got, you know, 2-3 weeks in, we're up to over 4,500 members. So I've had to employ the use of a guy called Tim Pierce, who's a great photographer, aerial photographer, to help me run the group. But if anyone wants to see stories and pictures and information about hill forts in the UK, then UK Hill Forts is the group to go to on Facebook. And we have a nice audience. We've got David Abrams in there, he's posted as well. So yeah, all going quite well. So what about, anyway, enough of me waffling about all the detritus I've been doing. How are you, Paul? What have you been up to?
What have I been doing? Not a huge amount, really. We did a video together, didn't we?
I thought I'd let you mention that one.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in depth. That's going to be my little potted subject in 10 minutes or so. So I will waffle about that, because there's a lot of interesting comments on that video, which I kind of wanted to... Do you see how I use the word interesting? I wanted to address those comments, but I'll do that in a short while. What else did we do? We did a video about sort of looking into the things that the Romans invented but didn't really push forward. And as every time I look at it, I'm like, I'm just staggered. And so I thought I'd combine two of my loves of abandoned railways and the Romans inventing steam engines. So that was a video in its own right. And you can research forever and sort of go down a million different rabbit holes in terms of what these people at the time invented. Vitruvius, a guy called Hero or Heron. Mm. And they invented so many different things using steam. And the Elo pile was one of them, which is basically a metal ball with water in it, and they would heat it, and it had two vents on it that would face in a direction, stuck it on some pins, and essentially this ball would spin around.
With what purpose?
Well, this is the question no one really knows. That was as far as they got. No. And they did write about this, but they only wrote about it in the capacity of, look at this fun thing we invented. Literally, that was it. And the writing on that Elo pile was all about how to build it. So in essence, it was almost like a toy. So it's like, oh, look at this fun thing. This is what happens when you build this little thing. But then when you look at other things they built, they had mills, right? And the mills they used, they had water-powered saws. And the saws were using a crank and rod, like a steam engine. Crank and rod as in the to push the wheel round. But this would push the saw. And then you look at other inventions they made with water. Well, they invented a piston and a water pump. And you think they had all this technology, but they just didn't put it together. And, you know, a few people in the comments alluded to, well, actually, you know, they didn't need to put it together. They didn't need the steam engines. Mm. They didn't need this technology. So there was no great sort of push for it. Whereas on the other hand, you had the Industrial Revolution, you know, 1750s, 60s, 70s, whatever, when there was a need, because all of a sudden we had product by the bucket load and we had a demand for product. And so there was a great need to sort of build these things. So it's fascinating. I could have done a lot more on that video.
So this leads to sort of the what if question. So you're saying that effectively the Romans had the technology, materials and means to instigate key elements of the start of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's just 2,000 years ago instead of a couple of hundred plus years ago. You know,
exactly, They wow. literally had everything.
Yes.
They had everything there. And there's talk, again, I don't know how true it is, but there's talk of, these people taking certain inventions to emperors and or people of importance. And, I think there's a famous quote where the emperor says, oh, does anybody else know about this marvellous invention you've made? And the guy says, no, not at all. You're the first to, I'm told. And he kills him. And, that's all just, it could be complete fallacy, I'm sure it is. But you think, well, the whole point being, there was no great need for this Industrial Revolution. They had everything they thought they needed. They got what they want. They had slaves to do the agricultural work. They had this road network, the Circus Publicus. So what was the point? But there's so many things that they invented with the use of steam, the automatic door, the organ, so many different things. And it's just absolutely fascinating. I could have done a lot more in that video, but I thought, no, let's keep it on the steam engine, walked an old abandoned railway, and it was quite different.
Wow. Because they weren't allergic to large-scale transport infrastructure, were they?
Exactly. Yeah, there's plenty of, evidence which details, the whole of that network was used and understood. And it was a system. There was people running it. There was people, working for the government officials that had license to travel on there, toll-free or whatever it was. Fascinating thing. But also, Eddie, the other one I wanted to talk about very briefly as of what have I been up to is Danebury Hillfort. I think I called you or spoke to you before I went to Danebury Hillfort.
Yeah.
And we talked about dronage. Because
it's a very difficult one to get on drone.
Yeah, it really is. Because it's just inside the Middle Wallop airfield perimeter.
Yeah.
So in my infinite wisdom, I went outside of that perimeter by 300 or 400 meters and thought, right, okay, at least I can get the drone up in the air, take a few shots, zoom in and take some shots. But I couldn't even do that because even 300 meters away, the drone itself, despite my app saying, yeah, you're well away, the drone itself said, nope, you're within the perimeter. Oh,
it really doesn't work like that. I had the same issue the other side of Benson. So I got RAF Benson up the road.
Yeah.
And right on the National Air Traffic Services.
That's the one.
Angel app. Yeah. It says that you can fly up to a certain point, which is just the other side of Whitton Clumps.
Yeah.
And it works and it stops where, the boundary is. But if you go the other side, you go over to the east up into the Chilterns, I walked probably nearly a mile outside of the restricted zone and the drone just wouldn't play ball.
Yeah.
And even on the app, you could see it was outside the zone, but it still just didn't take off.
I couldn't confirm it. There are people that have, there's quite a bit of drone footage on YouTube of Danebury. And they put like disclaimers in saying, oh, I did speak to the guys at Middle Wallop or whatever. Okay, whatever. But the video did quite well. I think it was the way I sold it in terms of the title, the thumbnail and the coin that changed history. fascinating.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
A guy called, what was he called? Something Fudge, Mr. Fudge, a metal detector, found a coin that was the first coin of the Belgi tribe with a name on it. So, and of course, everybody in the comments was sort of saying, and one thing I didn't explain, to be fair, was everybody was saying, well, hang on a minute, surely this coin could have come from somewhere else because they traded, that was the whole point. But the point of this coin was, and this is the point I didn't really make clear, was the coin had all the features on it of every other coin found in that district. So hundreds and hundreds of coins have been found from the Belgi tribe, but none of them had a name on it. They all had the same markings, so it was clearly it was from the area because it was the same style, same material, everything was the same. But all of a sudden they had Eustinos or something like that. Eustinos was the name of his king. So all of a sudden this guy, 6 months ago, discovered a new king. And it's just, wow. It staggered me. I thought it was such a fascinating subject.
That's amazing.
And I sold it as the coin that changed history. And, of course, everybody's like, oh, no, the coin didn't change history. History was already there. I know, but cross that, people. It's a YouTube video,
yeah,
for goodness
sake.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing find. I mean, I was over the moon when I found a Bronze Age ring ditch that hadn't been catalogued, but that's not exactly a history-changing thing. It's probably where someone washed sheep or something stupid like that.
It's still a thing, isn't it?
But yeah, wow, that's quite a find, that.
It's a heck of a find, and the fact that it changed the way we understand that tribe. All of a sudden they did have... Yeah, because a lot of the other tribe, the Atrebates, had... Tincormorus on his name on it. I think the Catavellini, they had someone on the Canti down in Kent. They had three different kings on theirs over a period of time, and it's just a wonderful thing, wonderful sort of understanding that all of a sudden this tribe in this area where we live, I think you're more of a Atrebates, if not, even further north than that, aren't you?
Perhaps. Yeah, we are. We're practically northern up here.
North for the M4, Hedley, so...
Yeah, north. Oh, God. I thought it was Watling Street. I don't know. No. But you see, that's another, what is it, 93,200 metal detectorists down at Daybury. Yeah. Now you've done that, right?
But
you can't really not do it, can you?
Yeah, exactly.
You can't not do it.
At what point do you stop? And say, this is irresponsible. Because I'm just telling a story. And I hope I'm capturing people's imagination.
And it would have been publicised anyway, so, it's not...
Yeah, and a friend of mine said, oh, I want to get a metal detector after that video. Mm. And you kind of think, do you know what, that's a good thing, right? As long as that person does things responsibly and gets the right qualifications and gets the right permissions, then crack on. You know, the more the merrier. Yeah. As long as it's done correctly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're not exactly releasing the nuclear codes here, are you?
No.
But it's not anything new and dangerous. But, you know, I mean, it's the same way with, you know, the National Trust meeting me at Whitehorse Hill. I felt a bit silly them finding my drone license on the ground. So there's no sort of pretending I wasn't there. But I said to them, look, you know, I'll keep posting pictures of Uffington and Wayland Smithy and everything. I won't take off from there, but... You know, I'll put a little thing on the picture saying that you can't fly from National Trust property. And if you can do that, if you do it responsibly and people adhere to that, then do it. You know, these monuments and these stories are there to be revealed. And, you know, it's people like you that are the revealers, you know.
I mean, the thing is as well, especially your line of work, it's like you couldn't be less intrusive. You're not even standing on it. You're not standing near it. Yeah, you're taking a picture from 200 yards away or whatever, aren't you? So it's the least intrusive sort of photography. But, that's what I've been up to, Hedley, making videos on YouTube.
So what about the video at Cold Kitchen Hill?
Well, yeah. Shall I talk about that? Because I've got a lot of, look at this mess of notes I've got in front of me, Hedley.
Well, can I put my just very brief perspective on it before you go into... So it's a video about open access areas. You promised me a nice, beautiful open access area that we could wander around and, you know, look at and film and everything. And it didn't, the day didn't quite start out that way, did it?
Well, no, not really. The day started out kind of what the video was intended for in a weird way, wasn't it? You know,
yeah.
We kind of thought that we would be able to, if trespass is the right word, trespass and get to where we were going, the open access land. But actually, it turned out that it was just ridiculously, A, far away, B, you know, fenced and some. But the whole point is, in this country, there are a lot of areas referred to as open access. So they are the areas on an OS map, 125,000 scale, which are open access. So they're not like a right of way in which you have to move along. So a footpath or a bridleway or whatever, you have a legal right to access, but you have to move along it. Open access areas are different. They're areas where you could stand and enjoy bird watching or photography or whatever that's respectful to the land. And that makes up 8% of England in terms of the areas that you have the right to go and enjoy and explore. And it occurred to me and Headley and a couple of others a few years back that a lot of these open access bits of land that were designated for you and I to go and enjoy as part of the countryside, turns out a lot of them are inaccessible. It turns out, according to the Right of Way campaign, Right to Roam campaign, and people like Guy Shrubshaw, it turns out that 2,500 of these open access bits of land are inaccessible. So you cannot legally get to them. So Headley and I thought, you know what, let's make another video, Headley, on that. And we did, didn't we? And it was a nice day in terms of what we saw, because it was a beautiful
Oh, the
hill.
Scenery. Scenery was amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Not so much getting shot, but, you know, the scenery was the scenery was amazing.
Well, that was the story of area number two, wasn't it? The irony was we couldn't even get to it because they were doing partridge shooting.
You got it right.
Yeah.
There's so many comments in the video that I... Because I said... I think it was just before you went on air. I said, oh, look, they're shooting grouse without thinking, why would you have grouse in Wiltshire? And then you said, oh, they're shooting grouse over there on tape. So it is my fault. They were partridge. Yeah. They were partridge.
So, we couldn't get to our planned area number two. Number two would have been successful because number two, the pathway goes within sort of 30 yards of this open access bit of land. So whilst we would have been trespassing, it was 30 yards, so no one's going to grumble. But the point being is I wanted to pick up on the comments, because it never ceases to stagger me that when you complain about a right of way or access or something, people always then question you. And you're like, well, hang on a minute. So, for example, there's four types of comments that I've written down, Edley. Number one, we have the right to roam in Scotland. Ha, 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 ha. Literally, there's hundreds of people that live in Scotland. And you know what? Crack on, because I'm entirely jealous of your right to roam. One day I will move to Scotland, because that is the plan long term. And enjoy the right to roam, I hope. And I hope England have it one day. They won't have it, in my opinion, but that's a whole other story. So, yes, we are aware that Scotland has a right to roam. Thank you very much for commenting. Comment number two, it's just trespassing. Just get on with it. And my comment to that is that's not really the point of the exercise. You shouldn't have to trespass to get to somewhere you're legally allowed to. Comment number three, you just make a mess. I don't blame the landowners for blocking this off, because you'd just end up littering, or you'd end up trashing the place. Or not you personally, but people. And you just think, again, that automatically assumes that everybody is a bad person and is going to trash the place. It's not the case. I think 99 out of 100 people would be absurdly respectful of the fact that they're on a piece of land which they're allowed to be in, as with anywhere, as with any national park. By and large, you don't see a lot of litter about. And yes, there's people that care for these places, but I think, you know, we should treat people as not guilty first of all. You know, rather than assume people are going to do something bad, let's assume that people are going to enjoy it. Comment number four or five, I've forgotten what I'm on now.
Four.
You don't know. People are saying like, oh, well, you shouldn't have the access to this. You don't own it. I think the problem with open access is the way it was set up. It wasn't really finished properly as a law. It depended on the type of land. The chalk downland was all set aside as open access. So, and you'll agree with me, Hedley, that we're not going to sit here and bash every landowner, because the amount of times that you would bump into a landowner and you'd ask them a question, and they'd be more. I've done it, I reckon, maybe four or five times where I bumped into somebody that owns a piece of land. And I think if you approach them in an open and honest way, 99 times out of 100, they're respectful back. You know, we did with a couple of Roman Road videos that we made a while back. And again, it's kind of beside the point, really. So the whole point of the video was, there's chunks of land which are earmarked for you and I to enjoy. The way the law was set up just allocated these chunks of grass downland. And there was no thought by anybody of how you get there. So it's not that the landowner has blocked it off. It's not that the landowner has done anything obtruse or wrong per se. It's just that, oh, well, that bit of my land, I'm sure they probably get grants for it, a set aside or whatever. But again, that's not really the point. It's just the way it's been set up is wrong. And all it needs is a simple solution. It just needs a really simple solution that would just say, right, in order for the landowner to get your money for set aside, it's got to be accessible. So could you just make it accessible? And I genuinely believe that isn't a costly thing to do, as long as there's no great implication. And I don't think any landowner would really mind that. It can't be used for farming. It can't be used for arable or whatever. It's a frustration. And there was a lot of comments that frustrated me.
That's a key point that you said about it not being used for farming, is that if you look around Wiltshire and certainly South Oxfordshire at the open access land, the land's usually got two qualities. First of all, it's pretty useless for farming. Yeah. It's usually steep, basically. So around here, all the open access land, bits of land, are on steep hillsides. And secondly, it's usually in a nice location.
Yeah.
So I think it goes without saying, every single bit of open access land is a nice location. So, you know, the farmers or the landowners have picked the land carefully and made it open access and not spoilt it, which is wonderful. But as you say, that's all for naught, really, if people can't get to it. It's a bit of land sitting there doing nothing other than earning a subsidy if, you know, people can't enjoy it. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So I just thought, what could be done is, potentially, make it so that for that to be an open access bit of land and receive a grant, then you need to make it accessible to people. So there needs to be a couple of permissive paths put in or something like that. And I don't think anyone's going to grumble about that, because, the third one we saw, Hedley, or the bit that we walked from A to B, our 100 yards, that could be easily permissive access a pathway without causing anybody... I mean, I don't know what it was. It was like a tractor access, wasn't it? Well, so
we saw someone there, didn't we? I mean, we were effectively, inverted commas, trespassing those 30 yards or so along what looked to be a path anyway, but it wasn't a public path.
Hmm.
And guy goes past in his little tractor thing and, morning, sort of thing. Yeah. Hmm. So, it's... But you're right, it's just wrong. I mean, a lot of comments also said things like that it's not a legal offence, it's a private matter, et cetera, et cetera. But, I don't know. I think it's an interesting video to make. And I think it highlights a key sort of, it's an absurdity, really, isn't it? Rather, it's not, it's kind of a quirky sort of half-baked kind of situation. As you said, I think, and Paul Timlett said it as well. It was, I think it was part of the Rights of Way Act, was it? 2000?
Oh, the Countryside Rights of Way Act of the
year 2000. That's it, yeah. But it was just kind of unfinished, like
half cocked, and it is what it is.
It's
tied in a lot with the Right to Roam campaign, and again, that's where people think, I don't want Right to Roam because it means you can walk in my garden, or I don't want Right to Roam because it means all the crops are going to get damaged. And it's like, well, then you completely don't know what Right to Roam means, because that's not the case, you know.
Yeah, and I'd heartily encourage people to visit, if they can, their open access areas nearby. As you say, you can find them on an OS map because they're shaded in yellow. You can go to Bing Maps and then on a computer or a laptop and put the OS layer on, and you can find where they are near you. And most of them are in really beautiful areas. So, say, there are sort of hillsides and things like that. And if you don't live near a national park, which apparently the Chilterns might be becoming a national park soon.
Oh, really?
So I will. But if you don't live near a national park, then open access is your kind of your key to the countryside. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Because
Of course, we had a lovely conversation with the bloke who called us a pair of communists for making video.
We had some proper harsh.
We had some.
Didn't we?
We had a lot of love and a lot of hate. But overall, it was really enjoyable, and most people were saying that it did highlight a fairly significant point that maybe not everyone has entirely noticed. And hopefully the video will bring open access to the attention of, people who watch it, because I think that they are woefully underused by the public. They're there to be used, and they're beautiful. So,
So that's my 10-minute rant. let's call it the clearing up and misunderstanding of some things. We should probably start Treasure Hunt, Hedley, if you're ready.
For those that are still here listening, we should. Right, so I'm going to open up maps.
I'm going to open up maps as well. I'm going to start on a new Roman road. In fact, I'm going to start on a place where I believe there is a Roman town, as you will have seen by the time this podcast goes out.
And I've already seen.
You've already seen it.
I've already seen. I was able to see the first draft. Really good. So I am going to have a swig of my beer. I'm on London Pride this week.
Nice.
I don't drink beer that often, usually just when we're doing a podcast. And London Pride takes me back to my Reading days for some reason. Okay, so I have a map open. Where are we starting then?
Right, we're going to start at a place just southwest of Basingstoke. Close to Mitchell Deaver, a place called West Farm, where the A303 joins the M3, and it could well be the site of the lost Roman town of Vindomi. But there we go.
Okay,
So, if I continue on the Roman Road theme ahead, I should probably head north.
Oh, you're getting a bit warmer.
Wolfram through Oakley, carry on going, because all this is a Roman road, even though you can't really see it. There's the line there. No. Up to the Portway near Tadley.
This would be so much easier if I was seeing what you're seeing. Tadley, let me... One day we will get this technology right. So, Tadley, I can get Silchester.
Yes,
so I get it right. Same thing. Right. Okay. So yeah, at Tadley. Tadley's a nice place. Got some nice countryside around it. You are marginally warmer. You want to go more on a diagonal rather than a vertical axis now.
Right, in that case, there's a great Roman road to take, which heads, I'm going to say northwest.
Oh, okay,
Right, so we're going to go northwest and we're going to go to Thatcham.
Oh, yeah, you're marginally warmer. I'd now be thinking more of an east-west thing.
Okay, well, I'm going through Newbury, Thatcham.
Probably going
a bit too far
north,
aren't I?
Perhaps.
I wonder. I want to do this via Roman road, you see, Hedley.
Yeah, I need a map that's got Roman roads on it, because I'm just looking at an OS map. But yeah, so you're going through Newbury westbound, right?
Newbury westbound. So somewhere Newbury westbound, you join what would be kind of like the A4 of Roman roads, M53, I think it was called. So through Newbury, turn left, and you go along like towards Marlborough. So I'm just north of Marlborough.
Right. Now, you got warm and then cold again.
Oh, really? Right, back up is what you're saying, back up.
Yeah, back up.
Back up, okay, back up. And let's get back on the original Roman road. What about if I head towards the outskirts of Swindon, Headley?
You're getting colder again, you see. Yeah. You see, when we had Sam on the show last time, she was really on this, but...
Well, only because she paid attention to social media, Headley.
I'm using a clever trick this week, and I'll reveal it in a minute. Right, so, you're going to have to back up, basically.
Right, I'm backing up.
Yeah.
Backing up to Newbury.
Okay, you've backed up too far. You did the right thing, yeah.
Hang on a second, you mentioned Lambourne earlier, didn't you?
Nah.
That's interesting, because somewhere south of Lambourne, by about 3 kilometres, no one knows where it is, but there's a Roman road that went down towards Lambourne, and it joined the one we're talking about. So if I go up to Lambourne and head north.
Oh, dear, it's getting cold up north.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness me. Well, I'm lost.
I've deliberately made this difficult. I've lured you into a trap here because...
All right, let me back up even further then. Back up even further to Newbury. So I'm back in Newbury.
It's good to inject a bit of excitement into
this. Back in Newbury. Yeah.
Where I've got you stumped now. You're back in Newbury.
Well, I'm back in Newbury. So, there's a lock down there. Next to that lock,
It's a nice lock, yeah.
Bit macabre. But in 1862, they thought that if you fill up a loaf of bread with mercury, stick it in the river or canal, it will help you find a dead body. And apparently it did.
But anyway. We still believe that in Didcot, but thankfully there are no rivers around here. So. I'm going to have to give you a bit of a clue. So,
give me a little bit of a clue then.
If you are in Newbury, you probably want to be heading a little bit southwest.
Really? Ooh. Okay. I've got no Roman.
There's an area. You're going to have to go on Shanks's pony then, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Right.
I've thrown you a curveball here because there's an area you're deliberately avoiding.
I'm deliberately.
And you don't even know it yet.
Oh. If I head southwest, I'm heading towards my hometown.
Well, I won't go that far, with respect. No. So just a little bit.
I'm not little bit. Choice, Edlin.
Okay. Right. So you want to make a triangle, roughly, between Newbury, Hungerford, and this other place.
Ooh.
Roughly.
Okay, right. What about then? Oh, you're thinking Coombe Gibbet.
You got it.
Ah.
So just for the purpose of... people that don't realise what's just happened. Paul and I are going to Coombe Gibbet tomorrow to meet Mr. WC21. And it had been noted that some of my pictures are a bit of a giveaway of where I'm about to talk about. So I've had to change things a little bit. And so I've thrown that one. I'm actually going to be talking about Walbury Hill down next to it. Yeah. But before I do that, I want to start by... finding where I was going to go. Yeah, I want to mention an author called Nicola Chester, who has written a book called On Gallows Down. So it was shortlisted for the Wainwright Prize 2022 for nature writing. And it's basically where she bears witness to and fights against sort of stark political and environmental changes imposed on the land that she loves. Really, really good book. I think she mentions things like the Peace Women at Greenham Common. So interesting times, interesting book. And she lives kind of local in that area as well. So beautiful hillside and everything. It is really, really nice there. It's absolutely wonderful. So I've kind of pre-scripted what I'm going to say a little bit. But that's because I've just got back from work. So Walbury Hill is in the North Wessex Downs. It's a fairly lofty 974 feet, 274 meters high. I've walked there several times. I have actually covered this briefly before when I did the Wayfarers Walk episode, but I think it deserves a bit more attention, especially as we're going to meet Mr. WC21 there tomorrow. So it's located on the scarp of the North Hampshire Downs. So the North Wessex Downs are like a big kind of U-shape on its side, and each area has got its own name, like Pusey Downs, Berkshire Downs, Aston, Upthorpe Downs. So the Hampshire Downs are the highest part of the range, and the highest point of that is Warbury Hill. So it's listed as the highest point in the southeast of England, being 3 metres taller than Leith Hill. Now, obviously, it's not very east, so there's quite a big argument to say it's not in the southeast. But if you deem it is, then it's the highest point in the whole of the southeast of England. It certainly seems to be the highest chalk downland in the UK. And the flanks of the hill lie within the sort of the Inkpen and Warbury Hill site of special scientific interest. So it's surrounded by other hills. It's if you imagine they're strung out along sort of the northern scarp. There is also a ridge of hills going to the south from Warbury Hill. So it's the highest ground in North Wessex Downs, and you've got Inkpen Hill, which is basically where Coombe Gibbet is to the west. You've got Coombe Hill to the south, Pilot Hill to the east, and obviously, as I said, Coombe Gibbet is sort of hangs off the side of Inkpen Hill. On top of it, you've got a massive 82-acre Iron Age hill fort. Really, really, really big hill fort on top. Probably, if you discount Maiden Castle, it's in the top three, maybe four. Okay. In the south of England. Really, really big. So although the ridgeline is the highest ground in the North Wessex Downs, its actual scarp slope isn't as dramatic as places like Uffington Whitehorse Hill or Martin's Hill. And this is because it falls away to about 100 metres down into the valley rather than 130. Or to put it another way, the valleys at the bottom of the hill are actually quite high up themselves. But it's still very, very dramatic, still beautiful. And then you've got the Test Valley, which is formed just to the west of the hill, and that's kind of sandwiched between Warbury Hill and Inkpen Hill. Coombe Hill to the southeast is very nearly as high as Warbury Hill, and it does look bigger from many directions before that kind of falls away to the humorously named village of Facham. F-A-C-C-O-M-B-E, before we lose too many listeners. So from the north side of the flank of Inkpen Hill, so Inkpen Hill itself, which is basically Coombe Gibbet and the area to the west, from the north looks a lot bigger than Warbury Hill as well. So Warbury Hill, it's a bit like Scarfell Pike. It's technically the highest point, but from a lot of directions, it doesn't quite look it. If you then sort of go 5 miles to the north, up towards, you know, Hungerford, and maybe up to the Berkshire Downs, you can then see that Warbury Hill is actually the highest point because all the hills kind of equalise in size. But the other hill is kind of a bit more shapely, and so they look bigger. The top is quite inaccessible, unfortunately. So the top is private land, and there's a gate going in there. I did, when I first visited there, the gate was open. It looked like a path, and I followed it up. But unfortunately, it is private. That said, the Wayfarers Walk itself, which obviously is public, it kind of bisects the hill fort at the top, offering ridiculously good views. So the county line with Wiltshire actually used to run through the hill fort, but this has since been moved to the nearby Membury Camp and the other side of Inkpen and Ham Hill, even further west. So the Wayfarers Walk runs along the top, and the Test Way starts at the car park on Warbury Hill, and that runs past Gallows Down, which is on the side of Inkpen Hill, before turning south, allegedly, towards the River Test itself. And obviously the video that you did on that I was in shows that it really doesn't follow the test much at all.
No.
several roads combine on both sides of Warbury Hill, and it allows two ascents from the north and two from the south. They're really quite steep in places, particularly one of the northern ones to the west. You see a lot of cyclists up there training for the Alps and the Pyrenees now, so it's a great place to train cyclists. My dad, when he was young, had an Austin A35 with a 0.5 litre engine, and he towed a boat to the top up there. They used to boast of that a lot. So the ridgeline itself continues east-west, and to the east it climbs back up to Pilot Hill. Although slightly lower than Warbury Hill, it's equally as dramatic. It's actually got 110 metre steep drop to the north and plunging tree lines down that. Although the summit itself is a little bit flat and uninspiring. I'm not sure whether they had that once had a hill fort on it. If it is, it's been ploughed in now. I don't know. If you go the other way from Warbury Hill to the west, things get a bit interesting on the shoulder of Inkpen Hill, as I said, because the test way passes Coombe Gibbet on Gallows Down. This is a very large wooden sort of gallows across, designed essentially to hang or gibbet corpses. It capably fits two corpses, and although today is a replica, the original was actually used. And so I've taken an extract from Wikipedia here. It says, it was erected in 1676 for the purpose of gibbeting the bodies of George Bruman and Dorothy Newman, and has only ever been used for them. Once, I assume. The gibbet was placed in such a prominent location as a warning to deter others from committing crimes. Bruman and Newman were having an affair and were hanged for murdering Bruman's wife Martha and their son Robert after they discovered them together on the downs. As you do. Unfortunately for the lovers, the murder was witnessed by Mad Thomas, who... Sorry. <Wow. laughs> Sorry. Oh, I'd love to have seen this. Mad Thomas has got a t-shirt that says... T-shirt that says, I shot JR. Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, Mad Thomas managed to convey what he'd seen to the authorities. He could talk then. The pair were hanged in Winchester, nice town to be hanged, before being gibbeted quite publicly up on the Coombe. So again, a lovely place to be torn to pieces. after the 1676 gibbet rotted, a total of 7 replica gibbets have stood in its place, the most recent that's up there now having been erected in our lifetime in 1992. Locally, 1992, I'd...
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is it. So I've been there when I was young. I didn't realise it was a different one. So the replicas don't change, you know. Locally, the name of this side of Inkpen Hill, as I said before, was Gallows Down, which then led me to actually go back to the internet to look at the difference, because I've been using gibbet and gallows quite a lot. What's the actual difference? So
yeah,
I found on study.com, it says that the structure itself was initially known as a gallows, from which the criminal or criminals would be hanged by the neck until dead. It was called a gibbet when the corpse was displayed at the end of the arm to expose their bodies to public view. Yeah. Anyway, Gallows Down is very popular for hang gliding, and therefore drone pilots are not the most loved creatures around. further west is the Wayfarer's Walk, or whatever it's called by now. It might actually be the Wiltshire Way. It crosses the back of Ham Hill, which is a beautiful scarp nature reserve filled with flora and fauna. And then the Wayfarer's Walk gradually descends into the deep, dark, mysterious county of Wiltshire itself. So anyway, I was doing this today, as I said, because obviously you and I are going to Warbury Hill and Gallows Down tomorrow morning to meet up with Mr. WC21, who is filming there. And I'm pleased to say he'll be hopefully on our podcast, episode 20, next one, if he agrees to do it. So yeah, that's my little subject today.
Well, that ties nicely into... I made a couple of notes as well, Eddie. In terms of... we did a couple of different things on the... Well, we did one different thing on the YouTube channel, didn't we? And we always thought, you know what, we could always do other bits and pieces on this YouTube channel as well as this podcast.
Yes. Because
obviously this podcast goes out on a lot of podcast platforms, but also on YouTube. So if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel and you like YouTube, go and watch on there as well, because we're aimed to have a few more bits and pieces. So for example, I was going to do an interview with Kate, who was in a video of mine a little while back. And I thought, well, that would be perfect for Wessex Ways, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. So it's like a podcast, but actually we could just do it as an interview as well as a podcast. But whatever, yeah. So all sorts of plans. What else do you want to see on Wessex Ways YouTube channel? What else do you want to see, I guess, is a question to our viewers and listeners.
So we'll keep with these format of podcasts. I think
going
forward, it's going to be a mixture of you and I, like today, the traditional format we're used to, and the odd one with a guest as well. So we've had one guest, well, technically two, because of Jane Manley. Interviewed her during our on-site podcast.
Yes, of course, yeah. That was perfect. That kind of thing would be perfect.
That was really good. Really good interview. Hopefully we're roping Mr. WC21 in for the next one.
Yep.
Label it as a Christmas special. We'll get him to wear a Santa hat. and we've got Kate, obviously, and do a few more on our own. And maybe, you know, I never know if maybe get Mr. Tweedy involved if he wants to be involved. You know, it'd be good to have any interesting characters. It'd be good to have on here. So,
I think so.
Talking of interesting characters, should we have a look at one or two comments? Now, I think we got the last podcast we did. We had an increase in viewership on YouTube, and I think we've had an increase, thankfully, you know, on platforms. So, for those that are new, welcome. Thank you so much for joining. So we got a lot of comments, so I'm not going to read them all out because we'll be here all night. I'm going to pick some at random. So I'll see if I sort of see some of the regular commenters as well. So Barry Bollard, 1408. I thought that the revision to the standard format with Sam as your guest worked really well. Worth exploring this setup with occasional guests. However, don't completely lose waffle time. Sorry, intellectual exchanges time. I don't think we're never going to lose the waffle. Yeah. Don't worry about that. Philip Bellew, 9645. Just caught up listening to this one. Interesting insight into YouTube mysteries and why things work or don't work. Commuted past Silbury Hill for 10 years and have seen it in all weathers and seasons. The current car park used to be the site of an old cottage and petrol station, which is visible on old aerial photos.
Wow.
Oh, yes. No, I've seen that. Yeah. The whole area is also in the exclusion zone during solstices, policed by the high-vis clad druid patrolmen and women. Oh, God, they go more... listeners who are intent on stopping you looking at history, especially if your old van has a chimney on it. That sounds dangerously close to being a personal experience. Okay, let's have a look. Okay, someone's saying, so Davey941 saying Sam was great, he's subbed her and will binge watch to catch up. That's good. This is a good one. My grandfather owned the old station house at Allsworth. The line is gone, but I found a photo of the station that hangs on my dad's wall.
Allsworth.
Wow. Allsworth. Yeah. It's not Aldworth, is it? Because they've got a pub and a church, but no station.
Allsworth.
Good pub. AWESWORTH. Definitely worth looking into that.
AWES.
AWESWORTH. Yeah.
Okay.
Aral Flex says, is it possible that the top of Silbury Hill had a zenith tube? Zenith tube allows the sun to be... directly overhead or shines into the mound in such a way that to allow the sun to reach the centre of the mound, in which case consistent with other mounds that could have been used to create fertiliser or an ingredient that the main use was fertiliser or maybe the production of iron. Or do you know, the theories of Silbury Hill just don't stop.
No, don't they?
I've been reading some papers on it and even the professionals can't agree. Let's have a look. Yeah, nice. Okay, let's go to Barry Conway. Waffle with glamour. Is this another must-do step on the route map to YouTube domination, Mr. Whitewick? Mm-hmm. By the way, I've solved the problem with the constant jiggling and zooming of the map. I just pretend I'm listening to a podcast at map time and then listen from the other side of the room. It should be a YouTube setting.
I do tend to flick around. When you're talking, I do flick around quite a lot. So yeah. I get that could be quite annoying if you're watching the YouTube version. So
I do think it does feel like most of our listeners are that. They're listeners rather than YouTube watchers.
That's right.
Because I'm getting a lot of feedback, good feedback, thankfully, about the podcast. And it's from people who tend to listen to it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're getting numbers these days. That's good.
Yeah, that's good. But anyway, numbers aside, let's look at quality. So suggestions. Anyone has got any suggestions for this podcast, for places for me to visit, things for Paul to talk about, maybe video ideas for Paul, video ideas for both of us, extra things we can do on this channel, like the recent aerial film we did of Wiltshire. Just put it down if you're on YouTube on the comments below. If you're listening not on YouTube, then, you know, contact us on Twitter. We're both on Twitter. We're both quite easy to find on Twitter. So yeah, do that. So, and of course, put any comments below. We will read them out, or at least some of them out, next time around. So yeah.
Absolutely. That's all from me.
And hopefully we'll have Mr. WC21 himself in the next episode.
Maybe we shouldn't ask him what the WC stands for. Maybe we just, like, it should forever be a mystery.
Do you know what I mean? I don't think my OCD lives with that. He goes all over the country. I mean, he's Walbury Hill at the moment. He's been all over the country making these videos. Some great locations like, you know, the Stone Circle up at Keswick and places like that. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
But nothing seems to fit with the WC title, you know. So yeah, I think that's a question for tomorrow.
When we see him. Indeed.
Yeah. Anyway.
Super. I think we're probably done, aren't we?
I think we're done. So I'm Headley. He's Paul. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Goodbye.